We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this hour, we'll be talking again about immigration. Now, we had a discussion about immigration yesterday on the program, and there we were talking about the United States, talking about the nature of life along the border between Mexico and the United States, and trying to talk a little bit about how here in this country we've thought about immigration over time. Well, this morning in this hour, we will shift our focus and we'll be talking about Europe. Countries all across Europe are in the midst of reviewing their policies on immigration. First of all, trying to meet the big challenge of balancing, on the one hand, the need for workers with the kind of clash of culture that comes with incorporating newcomers. They've been looking for ways to cope also with increases in discrimination, in racism, the rise of political parties with anti-immigrant agendas. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking with Terry Givens. She is Associate Professor of Government at the University of Texas at Austin, and she's an expert on immigration issues both in the U.S. and in Europe. And she's done a lot of research on various EU countries and published widely on topics including immigration, security, political parties, and European immigration. She's visiting the campus. We'll be giving a talk this afternoon at 5:30 in the Illini Union. Anyone who is interested is welcome. It's the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center that are sponsoring the event. And we're pleased that she could be here on this program to spend a little time talking with us and with you. So as we talk, questions are welcome, as always. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455 locally, toll-free 800-222-9455. And if you would prefer to send an email, you can do that too, and it's will-talk@illinois.edu. That is the address. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I certainly appreciate it. It seems that one of the points, I guess, that we made in the conversation yesterday as we were looking at immigration in the American context is that concerns about it, attitudes towards immigrants, they change over time between on periods when we've been very welcoming and periods when not. And I imagine one could say the same thing about Europe. And it seems that particularly now, partly, I think, in response to what has been happening over the past few months in North Africa. But even before that, it seems that European governments really were reviewing their stand on this issue. And in fact, I think a lot of governments were cultivating policies that were more conservative than they had been, and that they were doing that because they were facing some pressure from the right side of politics in their country to take a stronger stand on immigration. Can you start by sorting that out a little bit for us?
Yeah, that's definitely the case across Europe, is that you're seeing governments taking stands on immigration control. But not only that, with the revolutions in the Middle East and the flows of refugees into Italy in particular, there's been a lot of tension between France and Italy over this issue. And France, the President Sarkozy has taken a very strong position on immigration control. And there's even talk in the EU about easing the Schengen border issues, which mm-hmm. allows for free movement within the European Union to actually start having more internal border controls. So there's clearly a trend towards wanting to have more restrictions, more control over immigration flows.
Hmm. Is there something, aside again from what's been happening here recently, is there some more longer-term trend that's resulted in that kind of pressure on those governments?
Well, one of the bigger issues that has come up in this context is the issue of immigrant integration. And as you may know, there's been a lot of concern around the integration of Muslim immigrants. And that has mm-hmm. arisen partly because of the issue of terrorism and radicalization, but also just on a more day-to-day level, whether these people are truly integrating. And so you have the problem of, as you mentioned in your intro, the problem of kind of these two cultures colliding and a lot of concern, for example, in France about the issue of women wearing veils in public and so on.
I think it's interesting to make some comparisons between Europe and the United States. And one of the ways that that Europe seems to be different, at least in the United States, we have given lip service to the notion that we are a nation of immigrants and that we have always understood the United States to be a destination. And I don't know that countries of Europe particularly have ever thought of themselves that way. And maybe in the past, really, they haven't been the kind of destination for immigrants that the United States has been.
Yeah, I mean, this comes back to the whole issue of national mythologies and how you think of yourself as a country. The U.S., you know, the Statue of Liberty is one of our key symbols. And, you know, we see ourselves as a country of immigrants, and that is a major part of our national mythology. Whereas the situation in countries like France and especially Germany, I'll use the Germany example because that's a good one here, is that they see themselves as a nation of, you know, ethnic Germans. And so even just allowing other non-Germans to become citizens has been a tough issue. And it was only in 1998 that they eased their citizenship policies to allow children who were born in Germany to at least have the opportunity to become German citizens. So you have at least up until the late 1990s, a large population of people, particularly from Turkey, who had come to Germany as guest workers, who had a difficult time getting, even wanting or getting citizenship. And so in general in Europe, many of these countries were countries of emigration. Italy, you know, Germany, Ireland, all these countries saw themselves as countries of emigration. You know, the U.S. was the recipient of many of those immigrants. And in Europe, they have only in the last 30 years or so really started to see themselves as countries of immigration. And that's for countries like France and Germany. Countries like Italy and Spain have only in the last 10 years started to see themselves as countries of immigration.
Mm-hmm. And what has pushed them to have to start thinking of themselves?
Well, the numbers. I mean, really, it comes down to you can't, you know, Germany for the longest time was saying, you know, we're not a country of immigration. And it was when Schröder came in as chancellor in 1998 that Germany finally started to say, yes, we are a country of immigration. Even at that time, countries like Spain and Italy still didn't necessarily see themselves as countries of immigration, but the flows there from sub-Saharan Africa and northern Africa have just been so great that they've had to start dealing with these issues on a more regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And is it the thing that we're talking about here, simple demographics, and that is that they need people to work, and that's the reason that they don't have the native born population that will satisfy those needs in one way or another. They have to have people to work, and the only way to do that is to welcome people from outside.
Absolutely, but there's been a lot of tension more recently over this issue of unskilled versus skilled immigration. Mm-hmm. So after World War II, a lot of these countries, the UK, France, Germany, they had lost a lot of men in World War II. They needed labor to come in and fill in a lot of the jobs in manufacturing and so on that were going to rebuild their economies. And so they had very conscious flows of unskilled and some semi-skilled workers coming in. In the 1970s, with the economic downturns, that stopped. And then more recently, however, there's still been relatively large flows because of family reunification. And so, but then there's also been concerns about demographics. So one of the big challenges for Europe is that they have an aging population. They need money to be coming into their pension systems. And really the main way that's going to happen, because their birth rates are so low, is through immigration. But there's a lot of tension there because they don't necessarily want to be able to control the types of immigrants. And so many European countries have been looking to skilled workers, but countries like Germany haven't been as successful in being able to attract skilled workers.
Mm. Our guest in this hour of Focus is Terry Givens. She is Associate Professor of Government at University of Texas, Austin. We're talking about immigration and how things in Europe perhaps compare with the United States. She's here to give a talk in the campus. I think I misspoke earlier. The European Union Center is the sponsor of her visit here. And so I want to make sure credit goes where it's due. She's going to give a talk this afternoon at 5:30 in the Illini Union. It is open to anybody who would like to attend, so you should feel free to stop by. Questions also are welcome here on the program, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you may do that as well. It's will-talk at illinois.edu. Something that we've certainly been hearing about now for a while is the anti-immigrant sentiment and how that translates into politics in Europe. And indeed, there are political parties that have this as their one of their founding principles, their reason to be. And as we mentioned a little bit earlier, I think that it is true that parties on the right are becoming stronger and posing a kind of a challenge to the more centrist leadership of these countries. What is driving that, or maybe what has driven that over time? Is there a particular reason why those kinds of political parties seem to be getting stronger to the point where governments governments in Germany and governments in France and governments elsewhere have to take that really seriously and have to make it look as if they're responding?
This has been an issue pretty much since the 1980s when the French National Front came onto the scene and had some electoral successes. And I've written a book on this called Voting Radical Right in Western Europe. Give that a little plug. And when I was looking at this issue back in the mid to late 90s, the biggest factor was the shift in the economy. Mm-hmm. So you had a whole lot of voters who in the past might have voted left who were losing their manufacturing jobs, mostly men. And as these countries shifted to more service-oriented economies, a lot of workers felt either underemployed, they were unemployed, they felt insecure. And so when you had politicians like Jean-Marie Le Pen in France, who is the leader of the French National Front, stepping up and saying, look, we have 300,000 unemployed people and 300,000 immigrants in this country, you know, that shows the clear linkage that these parties were making between unemployment and the immigrant population. However, more recently, the shift has been to a more anti-Islam focus. So, mm-hmm. for example, Geert Wilders, who is the head of his Freedom Party in the Netherlands, has focused more on the issue of Islam. And even Marine Le Pen, who is the daughter of Jean-Marie Le Pen, who's expected to run for the French presidency next year, is also focusing on the Islam issue. And for example, she went to the island off of Italy, where a lot of the Tunisian and Libyan refugees are going, to focus on, you know, this issue. You know, we have too many of these Muslim immigrants and refugees coming into Europe and so on. So over time, their focus has shifted a bit. They're still focused on the whole issue of employment, but also the issue of Islam has now become a major part of their party platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you draw the comparison? Is it appropriate to draw the comparison and says, well, here in the United States, the conflict seems to have to do with Spanish speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And although that's an awfully broad category because the kinds of diversity in terms of where people come from, that's not reflected just in the fact that you say, well, they all happen to speak Spanish, but that they're very different in a lot of different ways. But in any case, you know, it's about Spanish speakers. In the European context, so there's this concern about people who are Muslims. And I suppose that some people will say, well, really, that's about security because we're concerned about the possibility that people might be associated and involved in terrorism and so forth. But there are all sorts of other things going on here, the cultural differences, ethnic differences, and religious differences, all of those things together.
Yes.
What's the point of friction? And when people talk about terrorism, are they really talking about something else?
Well, you know, the problem is with terrorism, that's a tougher sell because it's, you know, you've got the homegrown terrorism of, you know, that we saw in Britain with the 7/7 bombing. So really, I think the underlying issue is this cultural clash, that people don't feel comfortable in their neighborhoods anymore because they see all these people who are coming from different backgrounds. And I think a lot of it has to do with, for example, a lot of the upswing in support for far-right parties recently has a lot to do with the economic downturn. It was actually really interesting. I was talking to a reporter about a year ago about the fact that there really hadn't been much of an, or actually it was 2 years ago, about much of an upswing about around the far right. And yet within a few months of that, you had the European Parliament elections where you saw parties that had never gotten into the European Parliament before from the far right getting in, winning seats. You saw Geert Wilders in the Netherlands winning seats. Most recently, you've had New Democracy in Sweden winning seats in their parliament. The True Finns, I mean, it's just something that's really spreading. And then in Britain, you have the English Defense League, which is not really a party per se, but a very anti-Islam organization that has been marching in the streets and so on. So I think there's this clear issue around Islam. You know, in Switzerland, you had them voting to ban minarets. In France, they recently banned women wearing the burqa in public. So, you know, that's not necessarily, you can make it out to be a security issue, but it's really more of a culture, clearly a cultural issue. And so there's a struggle in Europe right now between kind of their liberal ideals about allowing people to, you know, have their religious differences and so on, but also wanting to maintain this Christian identity. And so I think that's where a lot of the friction is occurring. And people just feeling threatened. Especially when you combine it with the demographic issues. There was a book that came out by Tilo Sarrazin last year in Germany about how Germany is basically being threatened and dumbed down by Muslim immigrants. And a lot of people agreed with what he had to say. And so there's this sense that, yes, we know we're declining in numbers, and so are Muslim immigrants going to be filling in where we are declining.
So what is it for these kind of far-right parties that have this strong plank in their platforms that's anti-immigrant? What is it they think that should be done? Do they think that the door should be closed? Should they think that people should be expelled? What do they think that should be happening?
Jean-Marie Le Pen talks openly about deporting. And actually, Sarkozy, the president of France, has actually had a pretty active policy of deporting illegal immigrants. Not deporting illegal immigrants, of course. Basically, they call for women to have more children. I mean, the Freedom Party in Austria had a campaign to, you know, give women. They actually already provides a certain. The government already gives a certain amount of money for each child that a woman has. So to give more money, to encourage women to have more children. The German Christian Democratic Party back in the early 90s had a campaign called Kinder statt Inder, you know, have more children instead of bringing in Indians to fill our skilled jobs. So there's all these different campaigns and also point to the number of unemployed and say, look, we don't really need to bring in these immigrants. We just need to employ our own people. And, you know, you hear that even here in the U.S. It's like we shouldn't be bringing in immigrants when we've got, you know, 9 or 10% unemployment. So, you know, their argument is basically, look, you know, we have the people, we just need to, you know, do something to change the situation. But the reality is the demographics don't lie. I mean, they are declining in numbers and they have large gaps in terms of the numbers of engineers they need, as well as people who don't necessarily want to do the kind of work that immigrants do.
Well, then I suppose that is the thing that you often hear here in the United States, that first of all, you know, there are jobs that need to be done. There are people who are willing to do them. And that the issue is that considering wages and working conditions, that there are jobs going wanting for people to fill them. And if there's someone who is willing to come and do that job, well, we need someone to do that job. And why not make it possible for them to do that?
Yeah, and you hear those same kinds of arguments in Europe. But there's also the humanitarian side of it, because you do have these fairly large refugee flows. You know, during the mid-90s, you had the refugee flows coming out of former Yugoslavia. Now you have them coming out of the Middle East. And so Europe has very strong Human rights laws and so on. And so they do end up taking in large numbers of refugees as well. So that also puts a strain on the system. That's been a major issue in Britain, actually, is asylum seekers and refugees and the kind of strains that they put on their because refugees are a different category. They're not workers, so they're actually drawing more heavily on welfare systems. And so that also causes a certain amount of conflict in the government wanting to, make sure that people are making legitimate claims for asylum.
Well, you talked a little earlier about, made reference to the, the efforts that have taken place over time to make it easier for people to move around. Mm-hmm. And that was the part of the idea of the unification was that you want to make it possible not just for capital and stuff to move around, but also for people to move around. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that people thought at one time people would have thought, well, that's a good idea. You want to go from France to Germany and from Germany to Italy or from whatever, it just it shouldn't be all that difficult. You should just be able to hop in the car, hop on the train, and go, mm-hmm. and not have to worry about showing documents and going through checkpoints and all that sort of thing. Well, does this now do concerns about immigrants, does that call into question that people's commitment to this idea of free movement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even from the beginning, it's called the Schengen Agreement was the treaty that was signed to allow for free movement of people within the European Union. And not every country signed on to it. Countries like Denmark and the UK did not sign on to the Schengen Agreement. So when you go from France, if you fly from France into Britain, you still have to go through immigration controls and so on. So right from the beginning, there were concerns by certain countries about having the free movement of people, and now that's only becoming stronger. The conflict between Italy and France really highlighted this. Italy was shipping, not really shipping, but there were refugees from Tunisia and Libya and so on getting on trains and, trying to get into France. And France is like, wait a second, we're going to stop these trains and check them and make sure people have the right to be in our country. And to a certain extent, you can't blame the French. I mean, if Italy is going to try to shift their refugee problem to France, that's not right. But then Italy was also at the time saying to the rest of Europe, look, this is not just our problem. We need help. This is the reason we have a European Union, is so that we can help each other out when there are these kinds of issues. But the rest of the EU is kind of shrugging their shoulders and saying, hey, it's your island. It's your problem. And so, this highlights some of the issues around the European Union more generally. I mean, we could do a whole other show just about what's happening with Greece and the fiscal crisis right now and the issues around that. But it's really putting strains on this idea of an integrated Europe and what that means. So Italy is saying, we need help. France is saying, and other countries are saying, no, it's your problem. And maybe we should have more restrictions on free movement. So there is kind of a backpedaling now and concern that there will be more border checks. And they've already had the ability to do this in exceptional situations, of course, because if there were some kind of imminent terror threat, you would want to be able to check people. But giving even more broader leeway to exceptional situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had made a reference to economics. Certainly the countries of Europe have been having their difficulties the past couple of years, as we have, and some places much more than others. Greece is the one that people are talking about right now. There have been questions about Spain and its economy. I'm not sure Italy is in particularly great shape. How do these two things get tangled up together, and do they get tangled up together? That is, thinking about immigration and the places where economies are, the governments and the economies are really having a tough time.
Well, I think Spain is a good example. Spain has, even though they aren't on the verge of default like these some of these other countries, Greece, Ireland, and Portugal, still there's a lot of concern. There's high unemployment. And so one of the issues here is actually Spain is starting to consider sending some of their skilled workers to places like Germany where there's a need for skilled workers. It's also, there are major protests about the fiscal the changes that they're trying to make that are going to cut back on the size of government jobs, and so on. So, but for countries like Greece, where one of their concerns is that they've had large flows of immigrants coming in from Turkey and other places that where people have had easier access to the Greek Isles and so on. And so that's become an issue because, you know, they're having to cut back so much in their government as well. And so this is only adding to the tensions, really, of what's going on with immigrants and countries starting to be beginning to consider to, you know, kind of export their young, skilled workers who can't get jobs in their own country.
We have a caller here. We'd welcome others. We hope people can be brief just to help us out, but we'll take as many as we can. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Effingham, line number 4, the toll free line. Hello.
Yes, thank you, David, for taking my call. I have a question, and then if I could, a comment. My question to your guest is, what are you going to do about it?
Maybe you could be just a slightly more specific.
About the subject matter of the program just now, about immigration and about all the other things that follow in its path. What can be done? What will be done? Is there anything?
Yeah. Okay.
Is that close enough?
Yeah.
Dave?
No. That's it. Yeah. I think we got you. I think there that Professor Givens has some thoughts. Yeah. Good. Well, go ahead.
Okay. What can be done? And I'll focus on Europe since that's our subject today. Is one of the things, for example, I'll be talking about during the conference this week is the issue of what kind of rules and regulations should the European Union be implementing. And one of the problems with immigration policy in Europe is that you still have very different policies from country to country. So this is one of the areas where the EU has not done as much on the EU level. And so one of the things I think that's important is for them to develop a EU strategy around immigration, which they have been trying to do. But immigration's been a tough issue. It's been much more of something they want to do at the national level versus the EU level. And so I think one of the first things that needs to be done is for them to be more willing to collaborate at the EU level to work on these issues of refugees and the skill, you know, basically making a stronger policy on, you know, the types of skilled workers they want, developing visa regimes that will make sure that they're, you know, getting the workers they want and need versus just having to deal continually with family reunification and not necessarily getting the types of people they want. And also, I think, I've been working a lot lately on anti-discrimination policy. I think, you know, their anti-discrimination policy is way behind where we are at in terms of employment and so on. So I think those are some simple steps that could be not necessarily simple, but some steps that could be taken in order to try to improve the situation.
Does that get at your question?
Yes, it does. And that's one part of my comment, that these things represent a crust on human, I regret that word somewhat, but on Homo sapien existence overall. What your guest just talked about just now happened in Ireland, who their top of their class was coming to the U.S. to get jobs that people weren't qualified for here, if I remember the history right. But nevertheless, the immigration began to be a problem when slavery was had an end put to it. Then, further back than that, was the clustering of social groups as they grew. When they became grounded, they grew, the population grew just like it does now, and then expanded, and then when it exceeded its ability to survive, they broke off and moved somewhere else. And that goes back to the beginning of Homo sapien existence, once they began to cluster. And I think that's what the basic problem is. People have clustered, and there are 7.2 billion now, I think, and there are just too many people. And no one, all the symptoms that are described about what goes on, and that's exactly what they are. There are symptoms of crowding. And when you have crowding, then you have the social organization that we live under today that will exploit the situation. And slave was not free. He had to have maintenance. Now wage slavery has replaced that, and the bottom line is whatever the cheapest wage slave labor that can be purchased by the system, and that's what they do. And the crowding in the native, like Mexico, why do they want to come up here? Which, you know, they're indigenous peoples, and because they can't find anything to do under the system. And how are you going to live without money? And therein lies the challenge. Thank you.
I'm not quite sure what you might want to pull out of there. I still think it's interesting that, you know, the caller goes to the issue of population pressures, mm-hmm. because it seems that earlier we were talking about the fact that, at least as far as Europe is concerned, they don't, overpopulation is not a problem.
Yeah, it's
the opposite problem.
Yeah. I mean, crowding is not the issue certainly right now. I mean, I think what the caller was getting at is you've got crowding in the countries where people are leaving from, and that may be the case. I'm not a demographer, so I won't go into that, but and certainly I know something about the demographics in Europe, which is that, yeah, they are really in decline. They've got an aging population that needs to be taken care of, and so a lot of the draw for workers is coming out of this need for people to come and take care of this aging population, mm-hmm. not only to pay into the pension system, but to actually literally take care of. Japan is facing this crisis right now, and they're trying to find all kinds of ways to take care of their aging population. So this is something that for industrialized nations is a major problem, and even for the U.S.
Well, it seems that what drives people is probably one of the things that has always driven people, and that is that opportunity. Mm-hmm. They say lack of opportunity where they are, and the idea that their opportunity is there someplace else, so they're going to go.
Absolutely.
And people have always done that. But it also seems to be the case that in the past, you talked about, you know, various things that governments in Europe could do in terms of policy. But actually, in the past, that European governments really, they didn't have much of a policy, particularly a policy that says, we need these kind of people, mm-hmm. and so we're going to make some effort to attract those kind of people, or at least to think about. And I think that everyone would say governments have the right to regulate who comes into their country. Mm-hmm. That's not a particular issue. But and maybe, again, that European governments never really had to think about this before. And they're trying to get caught up with their policies, trying to get caught up with the reality of where they are now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of the problem is that a lot of countries like Germany, France has had a more proactive policy, but Germany in particular really just hasn't had much of a policy at all. So what you had is people who came as guest workers, the expectation was that they would leave. They didn't. They stayed. They brought their families. Because of the courts in these countries, they couldn't keep the family members from coming. So you had, you know, these increasing numbers of immigrants coming. And they, you know, the problem is, since they didn't have any kind of immigration policy like we have in the U.S., they really weren't keeping track of who was coming and didn't have much control over the kinds of people who were coming. So it's really only mm-hmm. been in the last 10 years that they've really started to pay attention to this issue and say, wait a second, mm-hmm. you know, we can't just say, you know, every family member should come in, but we should actually do something about, you know, saying, okay, we want people from this category, from that category, and to have it match up with what we need in the labor market.
We are talking this morning in this part of Focus with Terry Givens. She is a professor of government at UT Austin, University of Texas, Austin. She's visiting the campus here. We're talking about European immigration issues. We'll talk more in just a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Just a quick mention that in the second hour today, Celeste Quinn will be hosting. Stephanie Kuntz will be the guest. She is a historian of the family, and they'll be talking about a book that she authored that looks at the impact of the feminine mystique, Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, and what that had to do with energizing the women's movement of the 1960s. The title of the book is A Strange Stirring, and they'll talk about that this morning at the 11 o'clock hour. Tomorrow morning on this show in the 10 o'clock hour, our guest is journalist David Willman, and we'll be talking about a book that looks back to the anthrax concerns of 2001, the anthrax attacks that took place then. The book is titled The Mirage Man, and it takes a look at Bruce Ivins, the man that has generally been thought to be the person who was responsible, although some people still have questions about how this all happened. So that's tomorrow in the 10 o'clock hour. Also then at 11 tomorrow, we will have a health topic for you. Dr. Lester Farner will be here. He is a dermatologist. We'll talk about skin and skin care. I'm sure we'll pay particular attention to summer and sun issues. We're here weekday mornings, 10 until noon. You can check up on the schedule or listen to programs you may have missed by going to our website. It is WILL, it's will.illinois.edu. In this hour, the guest is Terry Givens. She is Associate Professor of Government at University of Texas at Austin. She is an expert on immigration issues, both in the U.S. and in the European context. She's visiting the campus here. We'll be giving a talk this afternoon at 5:30 at the Illini Union. Her visit here sponsored by the folks at the EU Center. And it's open to the public, so if you'd like to hear more from her, you can stop by. Also, questions are welcome here. We do have a couple of folks ready to go, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next caller up is in Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Hello, David. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have a general question, and I'll clarify it with a few sub-questions. My general question is, what is this thing we call a nation? And the guest alluded to the national myth. Is the myth what holds the nation together, and is the myth in some sense the collective memory of the nation? And then finally, does a nation, this thing that we call a nation, does it have something like an inalienable right to decide on the basis of its myth or its collective memory who is in and who is out? I'd be happy to clarify that further, otherwise I'd like to know the guest's opinion on that. I'll just hang up.
I think they're wonderful questions, worth a lot of thought and conversation. So I would just give Professor Givens a chance to take it on.
Yeah,
okay,
I mean,
I'll listen
this,
offline. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. Yeah,
that's a really interesting question because this is actually something I've been getting into in more detail, just kind of on the side of doing a lot of my research. Because one of the things I like to do when I'm over in Europe is to sit down and talk to academics and intellectuals. You know, what does it mean, you know, to be German? Actually, even going back to when I was a graduate student and learning German and spending time in Germany and France and other countries, you know, because as an I think one of my added values as an American is I'm coming at this from, especially as an African American, throw that in, is that I'm coming at this from my own particular perspective. And so I'm very aware of that, that when I go to Europe, you know, I am an African American who has this whole set of ideas and values and things that I think are important. And so I try very carefully to get a better sense when I'm over there. You know, what are the things that people in this country value? What is important about to them about being a nation? Because you know, I'm very proud to be an American. You know, my father was in the military. You know, I think immigration, you know, is something that has, you know, helped to build our country and so on and so forth. I also have concerns about, you know, immigration as well. But in Europe, I have a very strong sense of the fact that they just don't have the, you know, they don't have the same ideas about, you know, what it means a nation. They've, for one thing, history is very different. You know, here in the U.S., you know, World War II is, you know, ancient history, whereas in Europe, World War II is something that's very much alive to this day. And so one of the things that I talk about when I talk about Europe, I actually will be talking tomorrow morning about European identity, is the fact that for Europeans, a lot of their history harkens back to, you know, so for example, the issue with Islam, some of this goes back to, you know, when the Moors invaded Spain and, you know, Austria had to beat off the Ottoman Empire. People still think in these terms. And so you can't understand the way Europeans feel about Muslims and immigration without understanding the basic underlying issues of what it means to them to be a nation, what it means to them to, you know, have these ideals. So, for example, in France, part of the clash with Islam is this whole idea of republicanism that comes out of the French Revolution, which is the idea that, you know, everybody is equal. They are very much against this idea of communitarism, which they is the idea that people would kind of congregate in their own, you know, small communities based on ethnicity or race or religion. And so they have a really hard time with this idea that you would separate yourself by wearing a veil or something like that. But also, you know, you have to deal with the reality that they do still see these people differently, that there is discrimination and so on. So there's a lot of tension around these issues. And, you know, actually, it's been really interesting. You know, France has had major discussions about what it means to be French. The UK has had major discussions about what it means to be Britishness. What is Britishness? You know, there's these debates going on right now about what it means to not just be a nation, but also to be French or German, or, you know, can a Turkish person really be German? Because Germany has for so long had a very strong sense of ethnic German identity. So, you know, we can't answer the question. We just have to kind of continue this discussion about how these things are influencing policy.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think it also does, the question is an interesting one, is even if you look at a nation and you look at how it is they define themselves and what they list as their important characteristics, I mean, who's to say what is a myth, mm-hmm. and what is real, and does a nation actually have the right to make that definition and to somehow enforce it, whether it's real, quote unquote, or not?
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably have to say they do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you can't, you know, I can't go over to France and say you have to take on the ideals that we have, mm-hmm. in the U.S. You know, I have to go over and say I have to understand why you feel so uncomfortable with this woman who's walking down the street wearing a burqa, you know, as well as wanting to control who, you know. And the thing I tell people when it comes back to the issue the caller mentioned, you know, who is in and who is out, that's another tough one, because, you know, as a nation state, you do have you have sovereignty. You have the right to say who can come into your territory and who can't. And every country has their own set of rules and regulations about who can come in and who can't. So that's part of the reason, you know, going back to the previous question, is why Europe hasn't really had such an easy time coming up with broader policies on immigration, because of the national issues that come up when you talk about, you know, who can come in and who can't and so on. So.
Well, it certainly seems that Europe has had a difficult time coming up with broader policies on anything.
That's, well, yes.
And because that just shows you the difficulty of this unification project that they've been working on,
yeah.
Balancing the idea that there is good to be served by the idea of the unification,
mm-hmm.
you have to balance that with very strongly held ideas about national sovereignty.
Absolutely.
I mean, after all, you know, they fought over, oh, I don't know, a few hundred years, a lot of devastating wars that were driven by nationalism and driven by the, you know, the interest of accumulating territory,
yeah.
and what it means to be a great power.
And religion.
And religion. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why I think understanding a lot of the history is really important here, so that you can get a better sense of, you know, why is, you know, France reacting this way? Why is Germany reacting that way?
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot to do with their history, how they've dealt with these issues in the past, as well as current issues.
We have a cell phone caller here. I want to make sure we get them before we end up out of time. You hear line number two. Hello.
Hi. I actually have 2 points, one I had before and then one I want to make now with this latest discussion. It's there's a very strong pull in Europe to pull both relatively new nations such as Yugoslavia, mm-hmm. Czechoslovakia apart, which happened, and then also nation states that we think are fairly old and strong, such as Spain, both Catalonia and violently the Basque region are pulling away. And I think their national identity of most people in Barcelona would be Catalan and not Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I wanted to ask, a long time ago in the conversation you talked, or quite a while ago, you talked about the demographics of needing new workers to support the aging population. And that's a very interesting point, and I'm a baby boomer, so I think about this. And I hope that the world gets to a point where the pyramid demographics where there are many more young people than old people, that we go through that urn shape where there are more old people than young people for a little while, and we come to a new, stable, lower population. And that's going to be difficult for societies to do. And I guess as long as there's pressure from these other places to have immigrants come in, we definitely won't go through it. And as long as people want to keep the same unsustainable consumptive practices that we have in the West, it won't happen either. But someday it will happen. At any rate, I think it's a bad idea to rely on labor just to keep the standard of living up and to support the older population. I think we're going to have to support the older population on the left and then go through that demographic transition.
Well, and the caller didn't even mention Belgium, which has been officially without a government for a year and is talking about splitting between the French-speaking and Flemish-speaking region. And this is one of the interesting conflicts within the European Union about, we saw the Czech Republic and Slovakia split. We saw, after the elections in Belgium, concerns about Belgium splitting, Spain, et cetera. And, yeah, this is definitely an ongoing concern. Scotland still has major issues around their potential for becoming independent and so on. So this is, something that the EU is going to be dealing with for a while. In terms of population, that's a long discussion, and you would need a really good demographer to come in and really address that. But Europe, the problem is you have to look at the short-term facts, which is that Europe has to have immigrants in order to maintain their economic growth. And if they don't maintain their economic growth, it will just have major repercussions for their economies. So you have to look at both the short-term and the long-term issue on this demographic question, and that's something that Europe is really struggling with right now.
Okay. I want to thank the caller. We have time for at least one more. We have a couple of people here, but we'll go first to Champagne, line one. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I was wondering, because your caller was talking about, seeing the big picture, really taking a lot of things into consideration. One thing I always think about is the differences between right and left in the United States and in Europe. Immigration is sort of a right-left issue. I think people's opinions kind of line up along those sides. And to consider that, even right-wing politicians in America are often much farther to the left than left-of-center politicians here, just puts a really different spin on it for me. When I'm an American and I think about immigration problems in Europe, I think I'd be very foolish to think of them in the same way that I think about the discussions around immigration here. So I lived in Europe for a long time, and as a foreigner and a foreigner who knew people from other foreigners from developed countries and not so developed countries, Europeans were on one hand really great with us. So I just wanted to say that, and I really enjoyed the discussion. Okay.
No,
thank you.
Thanks. You may react to that. How are you?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, because one of the things you see is that, even in the U.S., but very clearly in Europe, everybody agrees that you want to have immigration control. There's really a consensus around that. The bigger issue is how you want to control it, and who do you want to let in, and how do you want to determine who you let in. That's where a lot of the differences, as well as integrating, a bigger issue comes between left and right in Europe in particular, between how you integrate immigrants. And so, for example, left politicians are more likely to push for anti-discrimination policies and so on, and right politicians tend to focus on more issues around reining in Muslim practices and so on. So, there are some major differences between left and right. But I think both in the U.S. and Europe, the one thing you can count on is that politicians will say, yes, we need immigration control.
One more caller here, line three in Champaign. Hello. Is there a caller there, line three?
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi. I had just a comment or combination comment question about the American myth and so forth. I think maybe it's difficult for immigrants to the United States sometimes to see that although the United States appears to be just a collection of individuals pursuing individual careers and dreams and so forth, that there is a collective myth, and it's not just an assemblage of individuals. At least in my generation, I'm in my 60s and so forth. I don't know if that's as true among younger generations or not. Do you feel that that's a factor as far as, again, challenges that immigrants have in assimilating into the United States?
Yeah, and there's some research that's been done on that to look at, for example, how second-generation immigrants feel about being American and so on. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I can't tell you the numbers off the top of my head, but that's certainly an area of research interest. You know, how do immigrants assimilate? How do they feel about American symbols and things like that? And, you know, how much do they integrate into that idea of the American myth? But the thing to keep in mind is that a lot of immigrants come to the U.S. because of that American myth. You know, they see the U.S. as the land of opportunity, and that it's, you know, welcoming to immigrants and so on. And so in some cases, I recall some research that shows that sometimes immigrants are even more kind of bought into the idea of the American dream than Americans are.
Yeah,
I think the meritocracy idea, the law and order, those kind of issues. Many immigrants are coming from countries where that's not very, those ideas are non-existent or at least in a practical level.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the immigrants who get the most press and notoriety are those who really don't respect those elements of our national identity through whatever crime and welfare, dependence on welfare and those kind of things. And but there are a lot, I'm sure, that are coming here for that reason.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the point that we're simply going to have to finish. All of us have used the term myth in talking about this national identity, and I think we definitely need to find a different word because it's I think we all know what we're getting at, but the idea that there is this core set of principles, maybe the idea is that we are dedicated to them, but imperfectly.
Yes.
Maybe that's a thing. And although we still seem to believe in them, and I'm sure that the same thing happens in places in Europe where people says no, we're French, we're German, we're British, whatever. This is the thing that we believe in, and we're not, you know, we want to feel that people who are going to come and want to live with us and become our neighbors and settle here are also understand that and are also committed to the same set of principles.
Absolutely. You almost verbatim said something that Tony Blair was talking about when he was prime minister.
Oh, my. Well, Tony and I go back a long way. There we'll have to finish. Our guest, Terry Givens, is associate professor of government at University of Texas, Austin. She's visiting the campus. The European Union Center, the EU Center around the campus, is the sponsor. And she'll be giving a talk, by the way, that's open to the public, talking about this very issue of dealing with immigration and making some comparisons between the U.S. and Europe this afternoon at 5:30 at the Illini Union in room 210. And anybody who wants to attend should feel welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for being here.